Session number 34702.
Reel 12.
Eight, then a reel 12. So once you got to be a captain with the squadron,
yeah,
were you given a sort of a specific amount of time that you would be on tour with that squadron? Because I'm assuming with Transport Command, you're with them a longer period of time, aren't you?
By this time, with specialist aircrew, there wasn't a specific two-year tour for the specialist aircrew people. For the career people, it was normally 2 years, like the CO and the flight commanders who were then going to staff college and this sort of thing. But for ourselves, there was no particular length of tour. And it was in 1970... we moved to Bryce Norton, so the strategic force was concentrated in Bryce Norton, where the VC-10 squadron had been set up and the Belfast squadron.
So it was a transport command centre?
Yeah, it was a strategic centre where the Hercules, etc., were all down at Lynham at that time. So we moved over here and carried on doing the same thing. Occasionally we get an interesting trip, I suppose, but most of the time it was the bread and butter stuff, East Med, or Gibraltar, or
did it change?
Quite a lot to Germany when they're doing exercises over there, taking people over to Germany.
Did the Far East
Canada
change, though? I think because Singapore in 1971 became independent, didn't it? So there wasn't the same commitment.
We were still using Changi then. Then as time went on, we started withdrawing from places like Aden, which we got involved in those sort of things. And we still used Changi, I think, right? Well, right up to probably, I don't know, 73, 72. It was in 1971, I was posted to the OCU as a training captain. Transport Command had its own rules. Even though under QFI, not many people were on the training side. You could be given a test by the examiners, the group examiners, to be a training captain. And I moved to the OCU then.
And that was in 72, was it?
must have been 70... one, I think. Well, before that's right, before I went, as a parting gesture on the squadron, I was given a VIP trip. I'd got a VIP cat for some general or other who was leaving his post in the Far East, the commander of land forces. So I flew an aircraft out to Changi to pick him up, and from there we went all around Australia and New Zealand, stopping off at all the usual places, Brisbane, and staying a few days, Canberra, Sydney, Auckland, Christchurch, Wellington, and then back to Changi, dropping him off there and then flying back almost empty, as it were, back to the UK, picking up a few passengers here on the way, looking for seats and a bit of freight. And straight after that, I then left and went to the OCU, 241 OCU, as a training captain, as I said, which involved several aspects to that job. One was PRT, which was periodic refresher training. Each crew, every 6 months, came to the OCU, and we put them through a period of refresher training on flying and examination on the ground subjects, meteorology, all these sort of things, and then recategorised them if necessary, or confirmed their category, and then they went back to the squadron. Another aspect was converting new crews that came in onto the Britannia, which was a bit longer, of course. And then at the end of that, taking them on the round-the-world trip, which was still in vogue at the time. Now, how we got away with it, I don't know, financially. But then the other side of it was the route checking. Pilots had to be route checked every 6 months, I think it was, something like that. And it meant one of us from the OCU either taking them from here, or if necessary, quite often flying out, positioning ourselves by VC-10 or Britannia at an airfield somewhere, and then joining that crew, who welcomed us with open arms, of course, at breakfast, and then giving them a route check on the way back, because theoretically, if they ran out of time on the route check, they shouldn't be flying, really. That job gave us great powers. We had a card signed by the Commander-in-Chief, which meant we could turf anybody off an aeroplane if we wanted to get to somewhere. And if the crew we were checking we didn't think was up to standard, we could cancel their categorisation and take over the aircraft ourselves. Not that I ever had to, but the power was there if necessary. So those were the three main roles at the OCU.
Did you enjoy that work?
Yes, I did, yes.
Is it interesting to do, Eric?
Yes, the PRT was a bit sort of routine, but when you've got a course to take through, or if you wanted to go off and do a bit of route checking, that sort of thing, you could vary it. I got that got to 1973, and it was rumoured then that the Britannias were coming to the end. What I could see coming ahead was a posting as an operations officer or something like that here at Bry's. I didn't particularly fancy that. I thought perhaps I'd done enough. A redundancy scheme came along quite handily at that time, which was quite advantageous financially. So I applied for that. And
had you come to a period where you wouldn't really be able to actively fly anyway because of your age at that point, really?
Well, I think they would think, because I was coming up to 50, that converting me onto something else wouldn't be worth the money, I suppose. So it was almost inevitable that they would say, well, you know, you've done pretty well, we need ops officers or something like that, which quite a lot of the aircrew were having to do. And I just didn't fancy that at all. Neither did I fancy going through the tortuous route of getting civil licences and flying and again being away from home a lot. So I completely cut from flying and left at this redundancy scheme in September 1973. That was the end of my Air Force career.
I've got really just one last question then, Eric, if you can. Can you sum up for me how you feel now about your time in the Air Force?
Oh, I wouldn't have missed it for the world. It was a great life and an enjoyable experience, and had its ups and downs, of course, like everything else. But as a career, I've got no regrets whatsoever.